was equatorial in its orbit in Juno, which is polar. And now you can combine that information with two other spacecraft that are on their way. JUICE is a spacecraft that's sent by European Space Agency. That's due to get there in quite a few years from now, but I think toward the end of the decade. And then also the Europa Clipper, which is going to find out a lot about Europa, but also about the planet itself. All that information is, they'll have enough stuff to keep going until probably 2050, once all the data is back. Back to you, Wes. WS2M.
Okay. So in other words, the amount of data that is available for citizens of the United States and anybody who wants to work on it will allow you to take advantage and create the pictures, because when they have a spacecraft that is cruising around and taking the pictures, they can't really take pictures every time. So there is a amount of data that is not processed and could be processed by amateurs, and then if that amateur is as lucky as Gerald Eichstadt, he would be recognized by NASA and eventually working with NASA. Of course, I assume it's not paid by that. But what puzzles me, Paul, is the... this planet is actually not a land at all. It is a gas. Let me drop it. So you have in the outer shell, you have a gaseous hydrogen. Then it's a gas, right? That gas is pushing a liquid hydrogen, which is actually the same hydrogen, but now in the form of liquid, because it's pushed by gaseous one. And then that one transforms to the metallic hydrogen that is below the liquid one. And then, supposedly, but not surely, right inside we have a very, very small rock and ice core. Just imagine how is possible that the gas is pushing the same gas into becoming liquid, and then is pushing the same gas into becoming a sort of metallic hydrogen. Of course, so we have something like a helium and neon as a rain in the middle, and we have a lightning strike there. Paul, back to you.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It becomes almost a metallic hydrogen under those high pressures. Now, it also becomes conductive when it's in that state. And you'll notice that all the different clouds orbiting, you know, when you see a video, it looks like the different parts of the planet are rotating at a different speed. Although, you know, the general rotation of the planet is, what, every 9 hours, I think it is. So because of that high speed and an unequal spin of all those clouds, it creates that dynamo effect, and it creates the most powerful magnetic field. It stretches, the magnetic field stretches all the way out to the planet Saturn, you know. So, I mean, the theory of that hydrogen becoming a liquid and almost metallic goes way back into probably the 1980s. I remember reading that in one of Carl Sagan's books. He kind of like predicted that. Back to you, Wes.
Okay, thank you very much. So we have a lightning not only on Earth, And I have another subject that is lightning strike energy, but we're going to go out of time because it's quite of intense in information. So I'm going to leave it to next week, this one, because I don't want to make it just in 5 minutes' time. We have it at 10:06 right now, at 10:05. The last one that I'm going to cover is the end connector nano VNA, and the model number is SA6SV4401A, which is from 50 kHz to 4.4 GHz, and that's with 100 dB dynamic vector network analyzer, 100 dB dynamic DNA. Okay, I'm reading that. It has 7-inch LCD, internal memory. The price for it dropped during the past week, and is now $318.99, but in some places it's $288. So if somebody wants to have a nano VNA that has 7-inch screen and N connectors built into it, there is a chance to do that, or if you wait a little longer, it may go down. The regular VNA is for $50 right now. Dr. Roy.
Okay. If anyone is interested, they could look it up. I'm perfectly happy with my 4-inch screen. Certainly enough not to spend another, you know, $300 on something.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Roy, and the audience for letting me to have this material available to you. And thank you very much, Dr. Roy, for your comments, and Paul, too. Back to you, back to Net Control and to FGN.
Okay, very good. Wes, thank you for your participation, as always, in the technical net. Let me try one last time for Joe, KC2QYW. Are you out there anymore? Yeah, well, I guess he left us for the night. I am AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. We still have a few more minutes, not many, just a few. If anyone has any short question or comment before we turn it over to Paul, hit that push to talk. So, okay, the silence is somewhat deafening. I'm not going to plead. Thanks, everyone, for participating tonight. Hope you had a good time. Hope you learned a couple of things. And hope you'll come back next week when we try and do it all over again. Right now, it's a little bit early for Paul. I hope he doesn't mind the adjustment in time. But now we'll give you the SpaceNet report with Paul WS2N.
Okay, Roy, yes, I feel like we started the SpaceNet report already with Wes's last couple of questions there. Very good. First of all, I just wanted to stand by one and just see if somebody, either Frank or Charlie, wants to join us. I know Frank is usually on EchoLink, but I think you would see that when you, Roy.
This is Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. Yes, I'm Charlie, and I'll be standing by tonight.
Very good, Charlie. Okay, because I had a question for you, because I think you went down to Florida. When you were there, did you get a chance to see the new Glenn rocket take off? Back to you, Charlie.
I did not. And let me tell you something. I wanted to see it, but I didn't have, I couldn't make the schedule.
Yeah, I think it went off at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that, right?
That's correct, and I wouldn't have gotten home until 5:30 or 6 in the morning.
Okay. Yeah, we thought about you. I was wondering if you were down there, if you had a chance to do that. Anyway, it was very successful. You probably read it. You know, this big heavy lift rocket, one of the few that are in existence, made it to orbit on the first try. It, you know, for any brand new rocket, that's really never been done. But this one was a heavy lift rocket. And, you know, we talked about it last week and all, but, you know, it did make it to orbit. The first stage was, they were kind of hoping they were going to be able to save that. They needed to land that, you know, in the Atlantic Ocean on a barge. But that didn't work out. They'll probably succeed next time, I think. That wasn't really the main goal. The main goal was to get to orbit, which they did. And it's the first real heavy lift rocket that runs on the LNG, liquid natural gas, which is really essentially methane. So first real methane rocket to make it to orbit. A heavy one. There's been another one, which is made by Vulcan. The Vulcan rocket made by Boeing and Lockheed, which have also gone to orbit, but that had two of these BE-4 engines, also built by Blue Origin, that the Vulcan ran on, and they just had two missions so far. But this thing had seven of those engines, so you had 4 million pounds of thrust. And it successfully got off the ground. And then the second stage took over with two BE-3 engines, and they have liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen engines. And I was glad to see them make it to orbit. And they've got another mission planned a couple of months from now. Anyway, thanks for giving it a shot anyway, Charlie.
Paul, I need to change the subject for a minute. My wife just had a knee operation. She had it replaced. Okay? So if I don't answer you, I put my wife to bed for the evening. But if she calls me, I got to hang up on you. So don't take it to offense.
Okay, very good. And, I hope she does well. And I know she's in good hands with you there, Charlie. Very good. As far as the Space Night report, I did want to report on another flight that Blue Origin is about to do within, I think, a couple of days. It could probably be I wrote it down somewhere. I think it's the 28th. They plan on launching an unmanned suborbital flight with their new Shepard rocket. The new Shepard rocket, they launch suborbital flights, and they also launch flights with people on them, up to six passengers at a time. And this one is, I find interesting. They've been planning it for years. And even so, it's unmanned. But the goal is to duplicate the gravity on the moon, which is 1/6 of what we have here on Earth. And to do that on a suborbital flight, You know, they plan on getting a couple of minutes of that effect of 1/6 gravity. And to do with the capsule changes, you know, it separates from the booster comes back, lands, it's reusable. They've done that probably 24 times already. But the capsule will separate, and then with thrusters, they'll start spinning it. And I think it's 11 revolutions per minute. And, you know, on the circumference of the vehicle, they have different experiments, a half a dozen different experiments by NASA that they want to test different items, different materials, different gadgets, and see how it would work in 1/6 gravity. By spinning it at that rate, they could duplicate that for about 2 minutes. They could also duplicate 1/6 gravity on the these airplanes that fly parabolic arcs, but they only get maybe 20-25 seconds out of that. But here they get straight 2 minutes, and that's really all they need to run these experiments. In the future, they plan on doing, you know, more of these, but yeah, they'll be able to duplicate any gravity. They'll be able to spin at a different rate and duplicate the gravity of Mars, for instance. So if you wanted to test a different tool or something, see if it would work, put it on the New Shepard, launch it on suborbital flight, and you'll be in good shape. Any comments?
Is that the NS-29 scheduled to go off Tuesday morning at 11 a.m.?
Yes, QSL, Charlie, a couple days from now. So, yeah, I guess the 28th. Yes, it is. And that engine is a BE-3 engine that pushes that rocket on a suborbital flight. It gets to around 100 kilometers, which is around 62 miles. It qualifies as being in space. And to get there, they have one of these BE-3 engines, which is liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, and it has enough thrust, I think, around 150,000 pounds of thrust, close to that, and that's enough to do the job, just the one engine. Like I said before, on the New Glenn rocket, the one that they successfully launched from Florida a week or so ago, was they have the second stage. The second stage has two of these BE-3 engines, so you're pushing over, they said, over 300,000 pounds of thrust on that second stage, which is really good. Competing against SpaceX, you know, Blue Origin has it, you know, hands down as far as the size of something, let's say, in diameter, that you could put in this thing. You could have like a 23-24 inch diameter thing and fit it inside the fairing of New Glenn. You could take, they said something like 12, short school buses and put them inside that fairing if you wanted to give you an idea of the size of this thing. Anyway, looking forward to seeing what happens with that, and I'm sure NASA will be happy with the results from that study. And it's much economical, a very economical way of doing things compared to actually sending something to the moon. WS2S. Okay. on a different topic. NASA's going to do another EVA. Last week, they did one EVA, and Tony Williams was on that one with another fella. But now this time, she's going on another EVA, and that's coming up also on the 28th, actually, with Butch Wilmore, and that's the other astronaut that she flew up with back on in June 5th, to the International Space Station. That's the one where they were testing out the Starliner built by Boeing, and they did not come back on it. And that's the one where the news media makes it look like, well, they're stranded up there, you know, like they're in a capsule and they have nowhere to go, and no food and no clothes. You know, you listen to the media, and that's the way you know they come off. Yeah, you know, I'm exaggerating, but you know that's the way they try to put it. Meanwhile, they're living in a, I guess there's about 16 or 17 modules up there. It's like living in a 15 room house with six other people. Right now, there's seven people on board the International Space Station. So, Sonny Williams, by the way, she's a ham, KD5, PLB, and Butch Wilmore will exit the space station, and they're going to do a couple of things with this particular EVA. They'll be removing some kind of a antenna thing that they're going to be taking apart. They're doing tests with some kind of swabbing on the outside of the space station, different things. Anyway, it's a six-hour spacewalk. And that's what it was last time, another six-hour spacewalk. So these people are having a, you know, good time there. Plenty of work for them to do. Plenty of food, clothing. And not only that, they made Sonny Williams commander of that International Space Station for the time that she's up there. Meanwhile, she was only supposed to go up for 8 to 15 days. Than Butch does, but you know, like when they do a spacewalk, the last spacewalk she did was 8 times, I think it was 4 times for him. So, another thing that she'll be doing this week, I think also within a couple of days, is Ares contact with a school in Florida. So that's all set up. From what I understand, it's going to be a direct contact. School has antennas, and they're going to have, you know, actual radios and, you know, an actual 8-minute contact with Sonny Williams as they go overhead in Florida. It's called the Pine View School in Osprey, Florida. I'm not sure where that is. But, you know, again, plenty to do up there. They'll probably answer, you know, 12 or 13 questions. I know the EVA is a bunch of, let's see, I'm just trying to figure that out. There's going to be a couple of other cool things they're going to do. I forgot what they are. I'll think of it later. Any comments?
Yeah, when does Sonny come back?
It was supposed to be next month, Charlie, but we have to wait another month to March, sometime in March. And the reason that delays has occurred is because the new space station, new spaceship is not ready. Elon Musk has another crewed vehicle that they're working on that's not completed. And that will be the one that will be going up with a crew of 4 to replace the crew of 4 that will be coming down. That's the way they do it, by the way. When they plan on bringing a crew down, what they do is they send up an extra crew first, and then the other crew comes down. So, you know, temporarily, you'll have, again, 11 people on board the space station for, you know, a week or two. And then Sonny will come down after that. So, there you go. Back to you, John.
Is he upset for the delay, or is he still happy?
I missed that, Charlie. Something about the delay and somebody being happy.
Is he happy about the delay?
Who, Elon Musk?
Oh, Sonny and the other guy who was supposed to come back a month ago?
Yeah, well, yeah, originally they were supposed to come back in June, you know, when they went up. They went up June 5th. You know, after the debacle with the other spaceship that eventually came back without them, and then they stayed on board the space station. They were supposed to come back beginning of February. Now they're going to have to wait till March. Are they disappointed? I don't know. They look like they're having fun every time I see them, or they're having an interview with somebody. So I would say no, and the reports are they're very happy. You know, this is what they dream of. They go up there and they would like to stay there. Don't forget, both of them have had long-duration missions to the space station before. You know, they last 4, 5, 6 months, whatever it is, in the past. So, you know, nothing new for them.
I hope they're enjoying themselves.
Yeah, I think they are. When they came back from the last EVA a week or so ago, one of the things Sonny Williams said, by the way, the guy she's going out with on the next EVA, Butch Wilmore, the same guy that she went up with, that's his name, Butch. And, yeah, she got back into the Quest lab. Quest lab is, that's where you don the spacesuits. Get ready for an EVA. You know, they have big spaces. Everything's stored there. And then they, you know, once they put everything on, they go through an airlock, and then they're in another little room, also part of the Quest lab. And then that's how they exit the space station. There's another way out, too. The Russians also have their way of getting out. But, yeah. She comes back and she says, happy birthday to her husband, you know. And then, you know, you heard some of the NASA people also saying that later. You know. So, you know, I'm sure their relatives are wondering, you know, how they're doing. And they video chat on a regular basis with them, you know. Including Butch Wilmore, he's got a family at home. That'll be big news when they finally do come back, you know. All right, let me just move on here, unless somebody has a question, comment.
Yeah, I got a question about India. India is sending up a rocket on Tuesday evening. How big is their, if they had to compare our NASA to their NASA, what's the size difference?
Yeah, they're pouring a lot of money into their space program. Absolutely. The rocket that's going up now is called the geosynchronous satellite. That one is planned on going to a geosynchronous orbit. So that's their heavy lift vehicle. They have primarily two vehicles that they use. They have the smaller one, the Polar PSLV, Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle, and this one is GSLV, Geosynchronous Launch Vehicle. The bigger one, And this is the one that they plan on actually using to launch people into space within probably a couple of years. You know, India's coming along. They built a spaceship that could handle up to 3 astronauts. They've launched a spaceship, on a test flight, without a crew, to see if everything worked out. It did. So somewhere down the road, my guess within a couple of years, they'll have a manned space program. So we'll see. Last I heard, they were in the talks with NASA to possibly make a deal where they could actually dock with the space station. Their docking gadget on the front is going to be compatible with the International Space Station, the American side, not the Russian side. So, that could be a possibility in the future. I'd like to see that. And, they just launched another rocket the other day, and this one had 2 satellites on board, well, part of the same, and what those two did was they separated from each other on purpose for 100 miles or so, and then they came back and they got docked with each other. They wanted to show that they had the capability of docking 2 things in orbit, which is not an easy thing to do. It's hard enough to rendezvous with one another, and this time they did it with, it's all completely autonomous. And I think they did it a couple of times, and they just wanted to prove to themselves that they could do it, because eventually if they have a manned space program, they're going to need a place to dock, either with another one of their modules that they plan on building, or with the International Space Station, or maybe one of the other future space stations that are being planned for eventual replacement of the ISS. So that's the story on that. It's a large rocket. They're pouring a lot of money into their space program. So I don't know what the value of the money that they pour into it is, but I know they're getting a lot of bang for their buck. The launch pad that they launched from the other day, this one that they're going to launch from is, they said, the 100th launch from that launch pad over all these years. So it's becoming more and more often. Back to you, Charles.
But they don't have a manned system yet.
No, they're picking people now for a crew, but they plan on having a manned flight within a year or two, as their first flight. So they'll do, an orbital flight, and they'll bring them back. Back to you, Charlie.
No questions.
Okay. My rig here getting hot. Do something here. Just curious if you still copy me, Charlie. Okay, let me try this. Different repeater, different power, lower power. Anyway, why do I have an antenna? I could swing it one way or another. You were talking about the amount of elements before on an antenna. This antenna has 10 elements on my 2-meter antenna. All right, let me drop it and I'll move on. The Blue Ghost lander took off also recently. I was launched on a SpaceX vehicle, and now presently on the way to the moon. I talked about this last week and the week before, and Anyway, it's supposed to take 45 days after its launch to eventually land on the moon. So this is built by a company called Firefly. Firefly is a rocket company. They're making their own medium lift rockets. They have had quite a bit of success with their engines. They've launched a couple of their own rockets, the smaller rockets, successfully for NASA and for the Defense Department. But they're also making a lander that can land on the moon. Again, unmanned at this time. And it's called Blue Ghost, and it was successfully launched. It will eventually go into orbit around the moon, 21 days Earth orbit, and eventually, they said 16 more days orbiting the moon before it actually lands. So a little over 40 days. Looking forward to seeing it land. They have 10 instruments on board. Out of the 10 instruments, 7 of them are for NASA. So NASA is going to cover this mission quite extensively. They covered the launch, covering the trip from Earth to the moon. But some of the instruments are interesting. They have the lunar instrumentation for subsurface thermal exploration with rapidity. They dream up these names. What it is a drill, which is a long drill bit. They plan on drilling about 6 feet into the lunar surface. And they have some missiles on the end of it. They can lower the heat, the temperature, whatever materials it's made of. But they plan on drilling straight down around 6 feet into the lunar surface. So that's one of the experiments. To see how that goes, it's very important that this thing lands. Then they have the Lunar Planet Vac, LPV. Well, the Planet Vac is just what it's like. It's going to be like a vacuum cleaner. And what they plan on doing is, it's made by Honeybee Robotics. And they've got this arm that's going to push nitrogen out of it's got a nitrogen charge. It'll flow down on the surface, and as it does, the dust will fly up, and they'll be able to collect it. So instead of actually doing a robotic arm and collecting something, they'll be able to just push this up, and then they'll be able to the other part of it has a vacuum to it. They have a pressurized system, which it's a vacuum on the moon. You need air pressure. They create temporary pressure, and then the vacuum part will be able to suck in any of the regular stuff that they call the dust and dirt on the surface regular. So that's another experiment they're going to try. Doesn't sound too different than what they had on OSIRIS-REx. OSIRIS-REx went out to an asteroid called Bennu, and this is something very different. It had its arm, a 7-foot arm that reached out to the asteroid, and it was like an 11-inch diameter ring, and it went near the surface. Again, a nitrogen charge went out around the conference, and then in the middle they were able to suck up material, little rocks and things, and that worked quite well. Now, that's what this sounds like to me, although they didn't say that in anything that I read, but it sure sounds like the same thing as the tag or machine on OSIRIS-REx. By the way, tag stood for touch and go, T-H-E. Let me drop it.
Paul, I just...
And they have
a couple more things.
Want to make your own fuel on the moon?
One thing is going to test materials. They have like 10 little patches, and each patch has a different material on the disc, and that's going to be able to tell over time the effects of the different materials. You might need a try a different material for maybe a spacesuit, something different, or maybe the shell of a exterior vehicle or a habitat. Anyway, that's one of the gadgets. Then they have something called the electrodynamic duct shield. It's an interesting little thing. I saw a demonstration. You know, NASA, like I said, is covering the flight, so they had it live. But, you know, before and after the flight, they have, like, little documentaries, and then they have people talking about this. And one guy had this demonstration of this electrodynamic dust shield. And, he was being interviewed by this guy. And he says, how does this work? And it looked like a little clear piece of glass. And they pulled some kind of dust on a lot of it. And it's not magnetic or anything like that. It's just, black dust similar to what you would get on the moon. So then he turned the power on, and apparently there's electrodes involved with this thing. I didn't see them, but he said, well, they were there, He turned it on, and he says it's a low current item. Got a voltage to it. He did say it was a square wave. And when he turned it on, all the stuff that was on this clear glass, it just moved off to the side, and he's gone. And it was pretty impressive. So they're going to test that on, in the vacuum of the moon. And that would come in handy, you can imagine being on the moon. And, before you go back into a habitat, hooking this thing up to maybe the spacesuit or equipment that you're bringing into the habitat, turning it on and have all the stuff instantly get removed from all your equipment and yourself, so you don't contaminate the interior, of the habitat that you might be living in. If you remember during the Apollo days, when they left the moon, you had three people. One astronaut stayed in the command module, kept going around the moon. The other two went down to the moon's surface, did what they had to do, brought back all kinds of rocks and materials. By the way, collectively, out of the six missions that landed on the moon, there were 840 pounds of stuff that was actually brought back from the moon. But when they would leave the LEM and come into the command module, whoever was there, Mike Collins was on that first flight. He turned around to Aldrin and Armstrong, you're coming in here with looking like that. You look like pigs, Stuff all over them. Well, I'm just envisioning, maybe the problem could be solved by this one little gadget, Except all you have to do is just scale it up. Any comments?
One, that vehicle that we left on the moon some decades ago, is it still usable?
Yeah, the LEM, little modules that brought up the rovers. There were three rovers that are now left on the moon. Out of the six flights, Apollo 15, 16, and 17, they had bigger engines. They were able to carry more weight. And
they brought the lunar rovers up with them. So, you know, they're still up there. You know, my guess is you would, you know, need to get it into a habitat somewhere. And hope that, you know, the funds raised and destroy maybe the wiring or something to the point where it's unusable. Would want to check some, you know, check it all out. But, you know, I could see somebody in the future getting this running. Of course, you'd have to, you know, put different batteries in. And many years ago, probably 10, 20 years ago, when I'd be on this net, a couple of times I brought that up. You know, I was always worried about competition, you know, with our country. You know, some other country landing on the moon and deciding, well, let's go over to the rover, you know, put a couple of batteries in it. The last thing you wanted to see is, you know, live video coming back from the moon with some foreign country riding around with one of our rovers, you know. Let's just put a battery in and off we go, you know. But, yeah, I guess that's possible. But, you know, in the future, we're going to have other, they've already designed it, they're working on lunar rovers that will be going up there. Again, the first couple of ones that are being designed are going to be very similar to what's up there, except a little bit bigger. Probably very reliable. I'm sure they'll be running on lithium-ion batteries. The Japanese, you know, they're part of the Artemis program. They're designing a rover now, which would you'd be able to put two people on the inside of it, completely enclosed, and, you know, you can ride around from place to place. They said, you know, in motion, they would probably, especially in the beginning, wear a spacesuit, you know, in case something happens. You don't want to be exposed to a vacuum, you know, if you hit something that fell over or something. But, you know, once they get to wherever they're going, they'd be able to walk around inside of this thing in a shirt sleeve environment, kind of like an RV. So that would be pretty cool. I mean, NASA has been designing that type of thing for decades, but JAXA, which is the Japanese Space Agency, are actually in the process of trying to build one of these things to eventually go up on a future flight. You know, I guess that's probably at least 10 years away. I don't know. You know, we'll see. But they're working on it.
Now they're working on the Mark 13 for Mars.
I don't know. I don't know that one, Charlie. What is the Mark 13? Is that going to be a lunar rover?
Yes. It's got six wheels, one hell of a suspension system, solar panels. I mean, solar panels that stick out far.
Yeah, okay. Well, we got a long wait, though. We got to do the moon first, as far as I know. Although, you never know with this administration. You know, they change their mind about everything in about every 2 seconds, you know. They'll have us landing on Titan before we can do anything, you know. I don't know, Charlie. We'll see. For now, as far as I know, we're still heading to the moon with the Artemis program. I don't see that changing. You have countless different states, different cities are involved with the Artemis program, contributing, employed people, scientists, engineers, technicians, all around this country. I just don't see that changing. So, yeah. There's also the Lunar Receiver Experiment. That's also going to be
on the Blue Ghost lander. And that's going to use, they're actually going to try to use the existing GPS system going around the Earth. They plan on trying to pick up the signals all the way from the moon, try to utilize those signals for navigation on the moon itself. You know, I don't know if it's going to work on the moon. They're going to try it, but definitely they want to try it. I'll be doing it now, you know, doing all these orbits of the Earth and then eventually orbits around the moon. And they're going to try to utilize the GPS signal. So that's pretty good. They also have the stereo camera for lunar plume surface studies. And that's another deal with a couple of cameras. They want to see all these engines, when they're firing and they come down, land on the moon, it's regular. Great dust and everything all over everywhere. And they want to see, you know, where it blows and how far away it goes. Get information about it, and maybe that will help future designs of landers, what they might have to do to an existing launch pad after they do land, you know, put something down where stuff doesn't blow all over the place for, you know, when they take off or future landing. We'll see. Anyway, any comments? Let's go to X-ray. Too fast, I heard. Two X-ray.
Guys, just wanted to check in on the northern New Jersey. Listen, and I see this is the Selden repeater in Suffolk County, and just was trying to see if I could make a repeater, and I did. The name is Al. We're in Clifton. Thank you.
Okay, welcome, Al from Clifton. And yeah, just one of our repeaters. We have a couple of them. This is the Limock Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club. You've reached the technical, which is on every Sunday from 8 o'clock to usually 11 o'clock, a couple minutes from now. And this is the tail end of it, and this part is the SpaceNet report. Usually only goes about a half hour of the old technical map. So, you know, if you stick around, you'll be able to access anybody you want after about 5 or 6 minutes if you want to transmit it. Very good. Northern New Jersey. And, yeah, Selden, we're out here in Suffolk County. Mike UTH is Ron Costa. And name here is Paul, WS2S.
Paul, QSL. Just wanted to see if I can make the repeater, and I am. And I'm glad to see that I can. So, yes, I'm in northern New Jersey, quite high up on the first mountain range west of the city. And the antenna is about 60 feet, and the height above the hill is about 300 feet. But thank you very much. This is November Echo 2 X-ray. I'm going to stand by and listen. Thank you, guys. Thank you. I'm sorry for breaking in.
Okay, and I got November 2 something or other X-ray. And, you know, I missed that one letter out.
Call is November Echo 2 X-ray. MCEZ number 2 X-ray. Over.
Oh, okay. NE2X. Very good. Yeah, thanks for checking in. And, we're coming to an end here anyway, so I made a couple of contacts earlier today, yesterday, into Jersey, other places around the country. I operated from home, and played around on mostly on CW. Anyway, we've pretty much come to an end. I'll see if Charlie or anybody has any last comments before we go back to Roy.
No comments.
Okay, very good.
And we'll catch you next week, Charlie. And very good. We'll get, let's see. We should shut this off here.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll close this portion of the net, and we'll be back tomorrow night on the on these repeaters for the club net. Even if Al, if you want to check into the club net, you can do that tomorrow night. That's on at 8:30. And these repeaters are all linked together. And you don't have to be a club member to participate there either. So very good. And then that's also followed up by Swap and Shop. And then we have the radio news line. They always transmit that at the end of that. At the end of Swap and Shop. Roy, over to you. AC2GS, WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, this is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do for the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially appreciate it. And I as well appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had a fun time. I hope you'll come back next Sunday when we try and do it all over again. But let me remind you of a few clever things that clever people have said in the past. Dick K2RIW used to regularly end the show and the net with advice to be kind to each other. That's always good advice. And, of course, good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open and not so wide open that your brain falls out, but open enough to new ideas and such. Everyone have a great week. Stay safe. Be well. Stay warm. And come back next Sunday and see what happens. So this is AC2GS formally closing this episode of the Limark Technical Net, and I will be clear after I say Slava Ukraini.
Good night, guys. I'll speak to you next week. I'll try to get on the news. I'll try to get on your website tomorrow. But I'll just be listening.
Okay, Charlie. 73. Have a good one. WS2N also clear.
Time complete.
KE2QR is testing. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
And clear.
Thank you and good evening, KE2QR.